Police Fire and Rescue Board today, Tuesday the 23rd of August. And just check apologies received.
Thanks, Chair. We've got apologies from Councillors Muirhead and Wallace.
And order of business is...
Thanks, Chair. Order of business is as the agenda that's been circulated to the group.
Okay. Members should declare any financial or non-financial interests they have in terms of the items of business, but you may do so at any time. I should also point out that this meeting is recorded as well, but as the Chair, I have the right to cut that short if there's anything untoward going on, which I'm sure there won't be. Minutes of previous meetings. Previous meeting of Fire and Rescue Board, 24th of May 2016, page 3 to 10. Just check for accuracy.
Chair, could I just point out on the first page of the minute, if you could just refer to it, Scottish Fire and Rescue Service, not Fire and Rescue Scotland. Thank you.
And if you're happy, can I have a proposer and a seconder for the minutes, please? Propose Councillor Baxter. And a seconder? Councillor Montgomery. And first item in public reports is 5.1, Local Plan Performance Report, report by the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service.
Thank you, Convener. We're without our local group manager, Mr. Mack, today, who we've given some leave to, whether he deserves it or not. So I'm going to take you through the performance report for Midlothian, myself, and then I'll refer you to Group Manager Gourley, who I don't think you've met. Steve is the Prevention and Protection Manager for Midlothian, East Lothian and the Scottish Borders. He'll take you through the prevention activity, which is added to this report. All in all, in terms of performance, the presenting really a balanced performance report here today. As you can see from the performance summary on page 14, across the board, figures are very, very consistent. At the outset, I would suggest that there's no areas of concern for myself within Midlothian at the moment. In terms of the trend against the East and also the Scottish figures, I will pick out some key areas from the report as we move forward. And I'll take any questions on that. In terms of accidental dwelling fires, you can see there that we are consistent, but not at the 10% reduction as we have planned to do. 15 accidental dwelling fires in Midlothian in quarter one, which is an increase of only one incident from the same period last year. I think I spoke at the last committee in relation to accidental dwelling fires and the correlation between accidental dwelling fires' severity and casualties and confinement to room of origin. And these are all factors which are really affected by some of the prevention activity and some of the home fire safety visits that are in place. So we are very much focused on a preventative agenda and making sure that homes have working smoke detection and the people are educated to discover a fire and leave their property and not attempt to tackle that. I think that's starting to bear out in some of the figures that we have. We do have areas of concern in terms of the breakdown of these particular fires. And for me, one massive area of concern is the fact that 70% of these fires are occurring in single occupancy households. I think if you check back the minutes, you'll see that this is a kind of constant theme for us, and it's trying to get access to some of these vulnerable people's houses to offer advice and to provide smoke detection that's often proved problematic over the years. There are plans in place at the moment, and we are working through a number of trials and pilots in the Midlothian area to try and address this. But I think it's interesting to note under our actions that We did complete 206 home fire safety visits in Midlothian, and the post-domestic incident response is a procedure we've put in place to look at ensuring that neighbours of surrounding properties are afforded some immediate fire safety prevention advice when there is a fire in the area. The slight weakness of that particular initiative is that we're often just meeting the worried well, so it's not actually people that we'd like to be targeting. We look to open up referral pathways in future through some of our unintended harm work to get access to some properties where we feel we can make more of a difference. The incident types are consistent with what we would expect, with 50% of fires coming from cooking. Now, it is probably worthwhile to point out that, as I said before, the severity of these fires is very important for us to look at, because this category covers anything from fumes from cooking, pans of food, toast, etc., all the way to a fully involved fire. And I'm glad to report that in terms of Midlothian, we were all at the lower end of the spectrum, but under the same reporting criteria. Moving on to fire casualties, and this is where I think it's very important to draw the correlation between this and the accidental dwelling fires. We can see that we have had an increase in Midlothian, percentage-wise, relatively substantial, but in actual fact, 1 to 4. These four casualties due to fire were all at the lower end of the spectrum, and none were removed to hospital. So what we're talking about here is casualties who may have suffered from slight smoke inhalation at the scene and been given potentially some oxygen or first aid by firefighters, but did not go on to the NHS in any way, shape or form. Again, all the properties where these casualties were taken from were fitted with smoke detection, and that in itself is probably a contributory factor to the fact that they were that they didn't go into hospital and were saved relatively early on. We are currently, just in line with what I said under accidental dwelling fires, we're currently in the final stages of introducing some more holistic home safety checks in the Midlothian area, and we're in the advanced training stage of what we're calling a Living Safely in the Home pilot. This is already working successfully in the Cheviot area of the Scottish Borders, and we're bringing that to Midlothian, working with NHS partners, occupational therapists, etc., with minor aids and adaptations, and it's given us access to properties that we may not have had before to get a holistic home safety message in. I think that this is the key to ensuring that we look at some of the most vulnerable people in the community in Midlothian, and we will be introducing that towards the end of quarter two. We have a good news story in terms of deliberate fires, with a decrease of 10 in the area, 87 deliberate fires during the period. Although that in itself is slightly above the East Area average, but it's in line with the Scottish average, but it's and certainly Midlothian locally, it's a problem that we've had in terms of deliberate secondary fires. Most of these are in the sort of waste scrubland that we would find around about parks, etc. Special service RTCs, road traffic collisions. Moving on, an increase of 1 in the same period last year. We are now above the Scottish and the East Area trend on road traffic collisions, and we're reporting our highest number for quarter one in 5 years. We still continue with our multi-agency approach to reducing road traffic collisions. The continuation of the Tomorrow's Driver programme and other events which are ongoing. We recently, as I mentioned at the last The last scrutiny committee, we had signed up to take on some education work at Edinburgh College, and I'm pleased to report that that has gone ahead with 100 students at Edinburgh College given a day's input on some road safety and some of the after effects of poor decision making and poor driving. Special service casualties, reporting 13, which is a decrease of 5 over the same period last year, and I think that's excellent in terms of some of the work that we've now taken on through the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service service transformation, because we're now attending, as you'll be aware, many more incident types than we previously would have, including first and co-response to medical emergencies. So although we don't have a specific out-of-hospital cardiac arrest trial within the Midlothian area, we have still been employed to attend these types of incidents for defibrillator calls in Midlothian. And you can see that the road traffic collisions, which I alluded to in the last indicator, have accounted for 7 of the 13 casualties. You can see that there was one fatality over the period, and that was in the water rescue category. That was actually to assist the police with a body recovery from Iron Mills Park in Dalkeith. So again, not something that we really at that point could have had an impact on in terms of body recovery. Unwanted fire alarm signals continue to trouble us. An increase of 6 for the same period last year, of 85. So we continue to look at ways and means of reducing unwanted fire alarm signals and working with duty holders and premises to drive these down. As you can see, 50% of the unwanted fire alarm signals in Midlothian are caused by equipment failures within the fire alarm system. So premises who are unable to use their automatic fire detection appropriately, don't know how to do that, or are using them in the wrong manner. 8% were malicious, and these tend to be in educational establishments, break glass call points, etc. And as you can see, 42% caused by people themselves. We have a number of current schemes to try and drive down unwanted fire alarm signals, because as I'm sure you'll understand, they cause us some concern around about management of road risk with unnecessary appliance movements. Clearly there's a financial element as well as the safety implications of fire engines hurtling around the streets looking for false alarms. We have introduced a UFAS champion into the area, who is one of our officers who is looking specifically at working with duty holders to try and overcome some of these issues. And we have graded our list of offending premises to try and drive this number down. But as I say, it continues to be a challenge for us. That is not isolated to Midlothian, and the good news out of that is that, as you can see from the results section, that the Midlothian trend line is significantly below the rest of Scotland and the East Delivery area. However, something I still would like to concentrate on locally. It would allow me far more time to dedicate to some of the intervention, prevention activities through the Living Safely in the Home and Unintended Harm that I'd like to move towards. That concludes the performance report against the local plan. I'll hand you over to Steve Gourley, and we'll take the prevention and protection activity, and then I'll take any questions.
Thanks, Chair.
David. Hello everyone, as David said, I'm the Prevention Protection Manager for the Midlothian, East Lothian, Scottish Borders area. My previous role was in the City of Edinburgh, so some of the issues faced down here are very different, and living more locally, I'm very keen to make sure that we have a very strong local focus on the prevention activities that we're doing, which some of which David's already discussed. And I think the importance is of how we progress that with our local authority, police and other partners. In terms of the performance report, the first page on page 29 is our fire safety enforcement audit. So that's the work that we do to ensure relevant premises, so which is pretty much everything that is not domestic, comply with the Fire Scotland Act and the associated fire safety legislation. Most of our audit activity is based on the Scottish Fire Safety Enforcement Framework, which is currently under review, but we do target the high-risk premises as a priority, so your care homes, hospitals, other sleeping accommodations that we would class as higher risk. But that's not to say that we will audit any premises that has a fire, as to ensure that where we can learn lessons, and particularly duty holders can learn lessons, that's something that we do. Clearly, the performance in the graph supplied is below where is expected, and particularly in April, where we had a target of 12 audits per month and there was none delivered in the Midlothian area. If we don't have a fire safety enforcement officer in Dalkeith, we can't deliver any audits. That's something that we have addressed, and we've now got a dedicated fire safety enforcement officer based at Dalkeith, coming with a lot of experience. Succession planning is something that's a bit of a challenge in the service just now, but our officer comes from the directorate and has worked on a national basis for a period of time, and I think as we go on, we will see a marked improvement in that as we move forward. Safe. Also worth pointing out that David has introduced a new performance framework for the area, which will also examine our audit outputs along with a number of other measures. In terms of the home fire safety visits, David already mentioned our 206 visits were delivered across the area. In terms of the points target, I'd maybe ask, is everyone clear what I'm talking about with the points targets? I apologise, this is my first meeting. I don't know how well that has been explained in the past. Chair, is it worth me just mentioning briefly? We are trying to target our resources at the highest risk people, as has already been mentioned, and our performance targets are based around 24 points for what we have classed as a high risk household, 8 for a medium and 4 per low. So we are below the target for our points in terms of we are not currently delivering as many of our high risk visits as we would like. But in numerical terms, we're delivering beyond what we would expect for the period of time. So I suppose this is an ask that I would be looking to our partners in the area of how we can improve our referral pathway for people that are vulnerable in the Midlothian area. If I was to reflect on the performance report I've done for East Lothian, where their community access team are referring directly to us, I can see a marked difference in the points total. And in fact, that red line is quite a bit above the blue line. So we're way above target, but we're actually delivering less visits in East Lothian. And it's purely based around the higher value, more vulnerable people that we're engaging with in East Lothian currently. So that's an area that I will look to deliver on as we move forward. The next page was just a breakdown of the visits delivered across the ward areas. That's in addition to what has been supplied before, but it was just to give the particularly elected members an idea of the spread across the Midlothian area where we're delivering our visits. The last page is on our partnership working obviously an awful lot of multi-agency work and partnership working going on across the area. I think for me the two key areas that I would like to draw your attention to, and I think this will assist in the work that I've just previously talked about, that our local authority liaison officer is now looking to co-locate into Fairfield House, and that subject to some ICT work, which always takes a little bit of time, will mean that there will be a far closer link with our local authority partners, and I would like to see that as a strong focus for us in our prevention work. The other area is the last bullet point on that list, the Living Safely in the Home project, as David mentioned. It's really about, with our vulnerable elderly, a falls prevention agenda, and with our vulnerable young people in terms of under fives and preventing unintentional harm in the home. It's a pilot in the area, but I think it's something that we will be looking to establish as part of our day-to-day home fire safety, which will more than likely be renamed Home Safety Checks in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. I just have a couple of questions and comments, and I'm sure other colleagues do. Just to pick up your point about prevention and making sure that you can get access to the highest risk households, it's interesting to hear about your success with East Lothian, and it's certainly something that we would aspire to. I know that we already share council tax data, and we do a similar thing with our community action teams. But again, if there is anything that you think would be particularly beneficial, that's something that we're open to discuss. And so if there's anything else that we can accommodate, please do let us know. And just a couple of technical questions, really. Is the reduction in all fire casualties, I was just querying that number about four. Is that four people out the same fire? And in terms of false alarms, I wondered if you had any idea what the costs of this is on an average basis. Is there any penalties for repeat offenders? Is there a legislation framework? And if not, should there be?
Yeah, thank you. Just in terms of fire casualties, I've not got the drilled down data in terms of that four, but there's every likelihood that could be from one incident. It wouldn't be unusual to have smoke in a common stair, for example, and for four people to be treated at one incident and not taken onto hospital. I'll pass over to Steve.
In terms of the unwanted fire calls, there was a piece of research done by our colleagues south of the border a number of years ago, and an estimated cost of just short of £2,000 per call. Obviously, that's not necessarily just cost ourselves as an organisation, but if you imagine a business having to empty everyone out, the cost to business continuity can be one of the main levers in us convincing people they need to make sure their fire alarm system is working properly. Currently in Scotland, the legislation does not allow us to impose any form of penalty. Slightly different south of the border, but again, there's nothing that we could do about that just now. Our focus is engagement with the people who are the constant offenders, and engaging where possible to reduce as much as possible. I think that was the questions answered.
Thank you. Any questions? Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. I was going to ask a couple of questions. One on the home visits. Do you ever see a need to go back to the same property for some reason, if it's perhaps high risk? You've suggested some changes in behaviour, perhaps, and you want to go back to see if these have been done. Second question goes back to the sort of budgetary one. It's probably more of a national concern rather than local here, but we've heard a lot about the pressures financially on the National Police Service. Not heard much about the fire and rescue, and I'm conscious that so much of your work is demand-led. You can't, for instance, not turn up at a fire because you've not got the budget, for instance. So what would take a hit would be the preventative work, which we've seen is really important. So I'm just wondering whether you are under pressure financially or whether you don't see a problem looking forward in terms of preventative work.
Thank you, Councillor. Yeah, in terms of review of a home fire safety visit, there's two real elements, I suppose, to that. We have a revisit schedule, so for every home fire safety visit that goes into the system, effectively, there will be a revisit scheduled. And that system itself is part of the weakness at the moment, which we're considering, because I think, as we've identified, we spend far too much of our time visiting properties that don't need us. And my belief, and as part of the review that we're currently doing on that, some of the information I've fed back is very much around making that visit and then making information available to those households so we can concentrate our efforts on some of the areas we can't get into. I think what you're asking is would it be likely that we would suggest improvements and then go back and check up on somebody? And the answer to that is generally no, unless they asked us back. We're not looking to enforce anything in terms of these visits. So it would very much be if we were invited back to check on something that the property had. Now, bearing in mind that we are fitting smoke detection and sighting it appropriately, so that takes away one element of what may be confusing to a person who's looking to be safer in their home. Does that answer your question yet?
Yes.
Yeah. The second part, in terms of the structure and the pressures in terms of the budget, I think it's, whilst it's maybe not as visible in the media potentially as our colleagues from the police, I would it'd be wrong to suggest that those pressures weren't there for the Fire and Rescue Service. I think what I can say in response to the question you asked about whether that would have an impact on prevention, we see an unequivocal link between prevention and intervention, and therefore the two go hand in hand. There is no current thought around reducing the prevention activity. If anything, we're looking through some of the service transformation work and some of the new initiatives that I've kind of mentioned today that we're piloting in this area to enhance that element of the work to try and bring down the other end, which we've been relatively successful at for the last 15 to 20 years, as the figures consistently show. And I think that we're now reaching a point in time where, as you can see through the last couple of reports that we've brought to this committee, the potential is that we're starting to plateau on some areas of work. And we need to look into some of these areas of unintended harm, because when we start looking at some of the figures around about specific fires and fire casualties in the area, they are at a low level. So from year to year, in the five-year trend, there may be slight deviations, but it's questionable how much lower we can go in some of these areas. And we need to start to look at contributing into other areas of community safety rather than just fire safety. So, yes, there are budget pressures. We are absorbing them in a number of areas. Clearly, the national approach has created some savings for the service, and we've had to look at restructuring to account for some of the others. Okay.
Thank you for giving a very extensive report, very interesting. You mentioned that you had been to New Battle College to address the students there. Wouldn't it be very useful for you also to visit all the secondary schools, and particularly the final 2 years, and explain to pupils the facts of life, because that is where they are so vulnerable and are probably able to take in some of the significance of the work that you do. I feel that's probably almost more worthwhile than New Battle College.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Devine. Yeah, the Edinburgh College initiative itself was predominantly in line with the road safety agenda, and that was an identified target audience, if you will, due to the age profile and the fact that, to a certain degree, that group of mechanical engineering students have a propensity to work on cars to make them faster and shinier and these types of things. So that was a particularly targeted approach. We are in all the schools in Midlothian, and we continue to work in the schools in Midlothian to deliver messages, and that extends from road safety to fire safety and beyond. So, yeah, we have a presence there, always looking to improve that, and some of the work we're doing with partners can only benefit in terms of the relationship we have with the secondary schools. But we have allocated work teams to each of the schools as well.
Councillor Montgomery.
Hi, thanks, Chair. Can I ask, in terms of the school visits, I know that in Penicuik, at the start of the... Well, before the Fire and Rescue Scotland came in, we did have a full-time presence Monday to Friday. I think it was five or six officers, and they've now gone. And I know that the work that they were doing, Councillors Devine point, they were doing a lot of work in the schools, which was, again, for preventative measures. And just to tie in with that, is that still at the same level as it was while the five or six officers were there? And also in terms of the home visits, I'm just looking at percentage terms. Penicuik's about 20% of the population in Midlothian. But if you look at the statistics in terms of the home visits, it's a good wee bit below that in percentage terms. You're maybe not have the figures on you today, so it's maybe a wee bit unfair, but is there a drop between the five or six officers? I could get that figure for the guys that work in the station at the moment. I know most of them. But is there a drop in that since the five or six officers actually left? Or were transferred or whatever, because I would have thought, on the basis that there was a full-time presence here, a lot of the work that we're doing was preventative, because obviously we weren't sitting in the station all day doing nothing.
Yeah, I think you pick up on a very good point there in terms of the operating model for the Penicuik Fire Station, which, as you've quite rightly pointed out, was a day shift duty system and retained response evenings and weekends. Previously, in terms of activity, it would be fair to say that there would be home fire safety activity taking place during the day when that crew was permanently on the day shift. I think it ties into my point greatly, because we still have the ability to look at our enhanced home fire safety visits that would be provided across the area. And you're right, I don't have the figures at hand, but I would suggest that the number of home fire safety visits in Penicuik will have dropped since we dropped the day shift crew. I think that goes without saying. I think what's more important than that quantitative figure is the quality of those particular visits. And I'm absolutely assured that we'll still continue to look at the vulnerable people in the Penicuik area and try to get into them using our community action team and using our community firefighters to target particular addresses in Penicuik, and that's the key information for me. But we're not there yet. We need assistance from partners to certainly do that. Is that sufficient?
Yeah, that's helpful. But as I say, is there any way you can get the figures? I mean, I know it's gone back a few years now since Police and Fire and Rescue Scotland were actually came to fruition. But it'd be useful just to know if the figures could actually be found. I know there was resistance for the guys in the station when the full-time officers actually came in, but I think they did actually end up working quite well together, and it came as a bit of a disappointment to the retained officers that are there when the full-time officers actually were transferred.
Yeah, I think you've highlighted the story in a nutshell. Really, that was the cultural issues with the introduction of a whole time crew was quite challenging in the initial stages. The day shift duty system model, which was applied, is not a national model for the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service moving forward. It's in terms of service delivery, it's proved not to be the most effective model in the areas and best use of our resources for assuring that we have a spread of fire cover that's appropriate to the risks in the areas. But certainly I'll look. I was just looking at my colleague there in terms of trying to harvest some of that Lothian and Borders data against the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service data. So we'll endeavour to get something in terms of Pennycook. But I would reiterate the point that it really shouldn't be a numbers game. It really shouldn't be a quantity of visits. I need to be certain as a local senior officer that we're focusing in the right areas, and that's what I want to do. And certainly in terms of Pennycook, you can rest assured that we're looking at the right areas.
Thanks. And moving on to item 5.2, which is the local fire plan development report by Scottish Fire and Rescue Service.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just in terms of local fire plan development, I wanted to bring this paper forward to yourselves to highlight an area of potential concern and potential conflict for us at the moment. The paper itself, obviously you've had a look at the paper, but I'm looking for your views and your support to move forward the local fire plan from its intended review date of March 2017 for review and republishing, and move that back to December 2017 in line with a number of issues that are ongoing at the moment. As you can see in 2.2, I've kind of highlighted that we have that statutory responsibility through the Police and Fire Reform Act to prepare the local plans for the local authority area. And you'll be aware through the discussions that we had previously on the introduction of the new Fire and Rescue Framework and the new Scottish Fire and Rescue Service Strategic Plan, which effectively should answer the questions that are posed by the Scottish Government's Fire Framework. That's currently ongoing. The Strategic Plan consultation for the service closed on the 9th of August. And the issue that I have locally as a local senior officer is that the plan that we have is effectively one plan to satisfy two masters, effectively. I have a plan in place locally which comes to yourselves for scrutiny, and you would clearly look to scrutinise our performance, and that's only right and proper. But the same plan is also designed to satisfy the needs of the Community Planning Partnership. And through some of the work that I've outlined in the paper, I believe that it would be beneficial for us for a number of reasons to try and align those two. It's fair to say that the direction at the moment is more towards multi-agency approach and community planning partners working in tandem on all the projects that we undertake. And I think looking at Midlothian's single outcome agreement, which itself is likely, as is my understanding, to become the LOIP over a period of time, it would be really useful for me to have an input on that and to have sight of that during the time that I'm looking at creating the new local fire plan. And for me to meet the timescales that I'm currently signed up to, I'll miss a huge opportunity to tie those two documents together. I think if you go to Section 3, when I look at some of the areas that the national priorities and the expectations within the group, I've listed there, under the bullet points, the things that came to mind in terms of the advantages to taking the approach that I'm proposing. Again, the second bullet point is only anecdotal, but having spoke to a number of people, and from the experience of fire stats, fire statistics across the country and across the roles that I've had within the service, the type of things that we'll be measuring are likely to be the type of things that we'll measure for performance after the new local plan comes in. I can't imagine a day when we don't want to look at accidental dwelling fires as a priority. I can't imagine a time when we're not interested in fire casualties. And those are all reflected in the current local plan. What isn't really reflected in the local plan is some of the other work that I've highlighted in terms of the work that we are doing with partners to make communities safer. And I need to have a little bit of space, I suppose, to build in some of that qualitative information that we can report at this board and also at the Community Planning Board with information as to how, as a collective, we're meeting the needs of the communities. So that is the proposal in essence. 3.2 takes you through a timeline which I've set, which ties in many of these issues that I've just discussed. And I'm just looking for your support in moving that forward.
Thanks very much for that. I think we're always kind of continuously saying the same thing in these meetings, that we do want to join up the dots and we do want to make sure that it's the best outcomes that we can get. So I'm happy to move the recommendations that we allow the proposal to extend. So looking for comments, questions and or a seconder for that, please. On you go.
I'm happy to see the report going ahead. I'm not trying to stop that or anything like that. But could I ask in terms of the, it's on page 39, 7.1, about, you know, employee implications. There's a paragraph there about that. I read recently, and it was also in the national news, that there was about 1,000 of a reduction in terms of fire and rescue officers in Scotland. I can't remember the exact figures, and I should have looked it up, but I think it was about 600 annoyed fire officers and about 300 annoyed kind of backroom staff. I mean, does that have an implication for 7.1? Because obviously if there's less bodies there, I mean, it gives you less flexibility to do, well, to develop a local plan if you want.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In terms of what we've seen recently, there has been that gradual decrease in numbers, and 600 operational firefighters or operational staff, not all firefighters, is the number that's been quoted. The part that you refer to, 7.1, is part of the paper, a supporting paper that I put in with my paper, which was from the board of the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service, and you're absolutely right. They have identified that it's a significant resource. That resource is the resource that's in the area anyway, though. So I think in terms of 7.1, the suggestion is that if we do it and we do it wrong and it's not meeting the needs, then we may have to look to review again when we're in line with LOIPS and so on and so forth. So locally, I'm content that my management team will be able to produce the local plan. It may be produced differently to the way that we've produced it in the past, but I have the resource to do that. I would like to see us producing our local plan along with community safety partners far more closely. The last iteration of the local plan was very, very much a national template with local indicators, but I would like to see it being far more localised moving forward.
Follow up to that. Thanks for that. Is it possible then to get figures for the reduction in employees in Midlothian then? Because obviously if there is a national one, we should actually be able to get the Midlothian one in terms of the difference as well. I know you maybe don't have it today, but I mean, like the previous question, maybe be able to get it for a further meeting, or if you can even email me or whatever you want to do.
Yeah, that will prove problematic. What I could provide is the resource-based crewing models, which I believe was discussed at this committee previously. When we changed the staffing figures for fire appliances and we began to effectively dual crew appliances, I can tell you that for Midlothian, with the exception of what you've pointed out for Pennycook, the resource-based crewing had no impact on Dalkeith in terms of the fire appliance and the fire station at Dalkeith.
Thanks very much, and we'll look forward to giving that due scrutiny when it comes forward in due course. Moving on to item 5.4, Midlothian Community Policing Team Activity Summary Report by Police Scotland.
Chair, if we could, I notice we've skipped 5.3, but just before I go into the, I'm quite happy to skip it. however, if it's okay with yourself, just as we've done previously, I'll hand over to Mr. Marshall, who'll give you a kind of national oversight before I go into the scrutiny board itself.
Thanks, Kenny. Thanks, Chair. Just a few comments by way of, I suppose, national and divisional perspective from my point of view. Hopefully provide a bit of context before the Chief Inspector gives you the detailed report round about his local area report. Just some news which I suppose you may have picked up through the media as far as our executive changes that have happened since last we met around this table. There have been appointments to the executive team following the retirement of Neil Richardson, who was Deputy Chief Constable Designate. Ian Livingston was appointed to the DCC Designate role, and Johnny Gwynn has been appointed as the DCC for Crime and Specialist Ops. ACC Kate Thompson has retired as well. Her post will be taken up by ACC Wayne Mawson, who was an existing member of the Force Executive. Two other appointments, I think, in the time frame that we're relating to is ACC Mark Williamson, who's appointed in the West, and ACC John Hawkins, who's got the Contact Command and Control and Public Protection portfolio. So all of those changes coming into effect in recent weeks. And ongoing work, ACC Malcolm Graham has been appointed now on a dedicated basis to take forward the Chief's 2026 transformation project for the force, which will build on obviously the foundations that police reform has given us and take us forward. I would stress the fact it says 2026 is a 10-year plan, but we're hoping that the transformation will be happening on a day-by-day, week-by-week, year-by-year basis, and we're not waiting for something delivering in 2026. That's what I'm assured. So just in terms of those changes, I think it's important for this board to be aware of the executive-level changes. No changes from a local police command point of view and from obviously from Kenny's point of view. I attended our force performance and divisional commanders meeting last Thursday, which scrutinises performance right across the force. From my point of view, there were three particular areas of interest that seemed to be common across the 13 territorial divisions and supported by the specialist divisions. Increases in what's called Group 1, there's crimes of violence, particularly around about serious assaults. An increase in the instances of reporting of serious sexual offences, rape, attempted rape, and some of the statutory offences in relation to that and recorded under Group 2, and the number of fatal road crashes. Kenny will get into the detail of what that looks like for Mid Lothian, but from my divisional perspective across the four local authority areas of West Lothian, Mid Lothian, East Lothian and Scottish Borders, our serious assault picture has seen an increase in numbers. We're up to the low 90s for the year to date. Half of those are in public space, usually at the weekends, and to do with the sort of nighttime economy. And the other half are, generally speaking, in private space and oftentimes relate to instances of domestic violence. And our very positive approach to that has led to more confident reporting by victims of serious domestic violence. Our Group 2 statistics, again, we've seen an increase in the numbers up to 72. The interesting dynamic around about that is that most of the those reports, over somewhere in the region of 80% of them, are either historical or non-recent, so are not haven't happened within the reporting period, not within the sort of six-month period. Only 20%, something like 17 of those crimes actually have happened within that window. That causes us some significant challenges as far as the forensic window and the ability to investigate them, and adds a layer of complexity. But again, is indicative of the confidence that victims have in reporting such matters to the police, and again driven by our very robust and positive approach to domestic abuse and domestic violence underpinning that. Fatal crashes, colleagues from Fire and Rescue have alluded to this. We have seen, unfortunately, a number of people lose their lives again on our roads. The sad fact of that is we have analysed it to death. We have linked in with colleagues from Fire and Rescue and with our national road policing colleagues, and there is no particular pattern to these. There is no particular common factor. We've done whatever engagement we can with roads departments to try and understand if there was any contributing factors. The vast majority of these come down to driver behaviour or driver error or some kind of medical issue that we believe the driver may have had prior to the collision. But we continue to dedicate resource to the task in hand to try and encourage, support, educate drivers in a way that will prevent such tragedies from happening on our roads. And we have had a huge amount of support from our National Division College in terms of road safety camera, unmarked patrolling vehicles, unmarked patrolling motorcycles, particularly to engage with motorists and drivers, as I say, on an education, encouragement and supportive way to try and moderate their driving behaviour. But there's a limit to what we can do, unfortunately, around a lot of this, and we continue to monitor it very closely. And I don't really want to talk about statistics around about it, particularly because these are lives being changed and families being devastated as a consequence of some tragedies. There are a lot of, obviously, other issues that have will feature in the national conversations that have been going through, and some of it being played through the media. I'll be happy to discuss those in due course, but probably wise for now that I pause and hand you over to the Chief Inspector to take you through the detail for Midlothian area.
Thank you, sir. Just on reflection, folks, in the first quarter of this year has seen some good points. It's also seen some challenging ones, I think, as the report reflects. I want to highlight one or two issues. I don't intend to go through it page by page, but I want to pick out some key points for yourselves. I'm on the first one, priority one, page 42. Yeah, tackling substance misuse, the first indicator, reduce the volume of crime aggravated by alcohol. You'll see that we're up in comparison to last year. However, for me, an important thing is I know that last year was one we seem to be continually speaking about it being down in a good year last year, and that was reflected across as well in the levels of violence. I think when we compare it still, we're still below the three-year average, albeit it's something we're mindful of, is this rise in alcohol-related violence. Key to me in terms of what are we doing about it, the dispersal detail within Dalkeith, which is the busiest town in terms of late licensed establishments, is I've asked for our policing plan to be completely reviewed, just to see that it is robust enough for it. Secondly, we've already started work in trying to encourage licensed premises to participate within the Best Bar None Awards. I was at the awards for last year, just about a month ago, where we had four successful ones. We're looking to try and increase that and so we start to compare with neighbouring authority areas. We already spoke, just having came out of the community justice meeting, that we're looking to try and pilot a similar type scheme to the arrest referral workers, which is looking at trying to engage with people who are in custody at their point of crisis, in terms who may have a substance misuse or a mental health issue, in terms of trying to signpost them on and get them referred to particular agencies to try and break that cycle. And lastly, we're looking at, for those individuals who are causing bother within our licensed premises, to try and seek exclusion orders to make that impossible for them to do in the future. Moving on to page 43, the only thing I'd like to highlight in here is that the positive rate of 30.2% in terms of our stopping searches show that we are being intelligence-led, we're stopping the right people at the right time, in the right place and for the right reasons. Page 44 and page 45, both indicators are going in the correct direction for me, so I don't want to dwell on any of these two indicators. Page 46, the domestic abuse and offences and achieving the detection rate is 75%. You'll see we are off target with that. We're sitting in the first quarter of 67.8%. Again, I think, as Mr. Marshall alluded to, this is definitely a priority area for policing. But in terms of actual detections, it's one of the hardest. In terms of often it's just one person's word against another. But that said, we continue to investigate these as robustly as we can. In terms of what am I doing to try and increase that percentage, again, I've asked for a full review of all unsolved crimes to take place and explore every single opportunity, investigative opportunity that we have. And secondly, I've identified a selected number of officers to go through enhanced training, investigative training, with our specialist domestic abuse investigation unit in order to try and increase that specialism right throughout my operational model within Midlothian. Moving on to page 47, and it's one of the key areas for myself in trying to address, is that we have seen an increase in the level of violence in the first three months of this calendar year. We had a particularly good year last year. However, I am conscious that the figures here look as though they're quite startling. To try and put some contextual stuff behind that, and I think it's important, is that in terms of the serious assaults, and again, the boss alluded to the fact that the number of serious assaults have increased quite significantly for me, is the change and that what is deemed to be a serious assault now in comparison to previous years, which has had a detrimental effect in terms of the figures. Further, I think members need to know as well is that the vast majority of these assaults, and that includes the serious assaults and the assault and robberies, are actually taking part between two peoples who are associating with one another. They're not unprovoked and they're not stranger type attacks that are taking place. And whilst I'm not wanting to diminish the fact that it's still a serious offence, what needs to be known is that we don't have an increase in unprovoked or unknown assaults within Midlothian. On the positive side, whilst it says that the detection rate at this point for all Group 1 crime is 80%, which is down from 88% previous year to date, I can tell you that we're currently sitting, as at today's date, we've increased that to 95.6%, which is a tremendous figure in terms of actually getting a hold of those who have perpetrated these crimes. And that's broken down into the attempt murders. They've all been solved. We've actually solved more serious assaults than have taken place. And you might say, how have you managed that? That's in relation to we've detected historical crimes in this reporting period previously. And in terms of robberies, we're sitting at 91.7%. So whilst we want to try and reduce and slow down the commission rate, I think members need to know that in terms of our investigation into these are very, very robust and we are bringing people to justice. Moving on to page 68, which is the priority of making our roads safer. And again, I know Mr. Marshall has touched upon this, and it's a continual challenge, I have to say. And whilst it's shown there's no fatalities in that first quarter, I think every member around the table will know that that's going to be a different picture when I'm standing here and reporting back in November following two very serious road accidents that we've had within Midlothian. Importantly for me is what can we do about it, and what are we doing about it?
one of the key things down there, you'll see that there's in the What Are We Doing? Tomorrow's driver events aimed at S5 to S6 year pupils to raise awareness of the dangers on the road. That actually takes place next week at Brunton Hall in Musselburgh. It's attended by every single secondary school throughout Midlothian and East Lothian, where we focus quite heavily in terms of the dangers in conjunction with our colleagues in the fire service and other partner agencies. And I think the importance of that is when you actually link that to the next page, page 50 or 68, when we speak about dangerous driving, you'll see that males aged 19 to 26 years represent 55% of all individuals there. So there is a real, real link in young drivers, driver behaviour that needs to be addressed, and there's a lot of work goes into that. I think for me as well is that I've done quite a bit of work with the camera partnership. And previously, Midlothian had very limited sites. Through that work there, we have hopefully identified and will get approved a further 4 sites throughout Midlothian, which will give far greater scope in terms of the deployment of the Road Safety Camera Partnership, again, in their efforts to try and reduce driving behaviour. Page 51 of 60, I have to say, is a very positive message in terms of the hate crime. We are on target for it. We're above where we were last year, and you can look at it and the reasons. We've had three less recorded crimes in that first quarter than we did the previous. You could look at that as a positive, or you could look at it as a negative in relation to if the figures are high, are we then starting to speak about we have gained the confidence of individuals to come forward. It's one of these we'll debate, and I think everybody can have their views in it, but three less reported crimes is always positive to me, and we're doing a good job in terms of detecting those that are reported to us. In terms of what are we doing, I'm conscious of the fact that we do attend the local universities and colleges and their Freshers Week, and this is one area of business that we do cover in terms of hate crime and trying to get individuals who are maybe new to the area and are from that type of background to come forward and not be afraid to make sure that they do report and what the mechanisms are there, particularly around about remote reporting sites and things. Page 52, 68. The overall number of incidents of antisocial behaviour, I think it's for about the first time in about five meetings that I've been to, I can actually say that we're on target with this one, which is a real, real positive. When I balance that against an increase in call demand for Midlothian of over 12%, this is a really, really positive one for me in terms of the work that's ongoing. And this is multi-agency work. This isn't the work that the police are doing in isolation. It's definitely all credit to the structures that are in place within Midlothian in targeting the right individuals. Big successes, and in particular I highlight the Bonnyrigg problem solving partnership, which was successful in addressing, identifying an emerging trend and putting in a very structured plan round about there, which did have some really significant results in terms of reducing the overall levels of antisocial behaviour in these areas. And also we continue with our diversionary projects, the recent challenge project, the Army Youth one, and we're already going to be starting to look at further rural experience Midlothian projects. But I think in terms of reducing antisocial behaviour, we're bucking the trend slightly in that regard, which is a real positive for Midlothian. Moving on, page 53, the tackling serious and organised crime. We still do have the one mapped group within Midlothian, which is the Operation Bistro group, which is tackling acquisitive crime. I'm going to come on to speak about Priority 7. You'll know why that is still a mapped group. I do want to touch upon the stuff, what we're doing, and I think it's all credit. The work that we're doing in particular with Midlothian Council and the integrity group that's been established there, we now have a structured action plan in place, plans in there to try and spread that word right throughout all council staff members and the part that they have to play in tackling serious and organised crime group. And I think for me, there was an incident the weekend involving where we had Midlothian staff coming forward and reporting suspicions, which led to a very successful drug recovery. So that message is getting out, it's getting filtered, and it's working well, and long may that continue. Page 55 of 68, moving on to Priority 7, reducing housebreaking, reduce the number of thefts with housebreaking at domestic properties. Again, a continued challenge, and probably the biggest challenge that I face as a local area commander for Midlothian. It's not the first time I've said that, and we're doing shed loads of work, I have to say, in relation to try and address this issue. It's still a big area of concern for us, and it just seems to be we have a number of different teams that are operating throughout Midlothian, some who will target domestic dwellings for the purposes of stealing high-performance vehicles. You have others who are targeting properties and are stealing jewellery, and you have others who are targeting property and will steal electrical groups. When I link it to our detection rate, you will see that we've had a lot of success in terms of targeting known offenders, but it seems to be that for every one or two that we lock up, we have another spate of individuals who are willing to take their place. We continually try and put out prevention messages out to members of the public, because ultimately they are our eyes and ears. They are the individuals that can try and protect their own property with them, and we've got a lot of work still to do in terms of highlighting, trying to get the message through to all the residents in Midlothian to be vigilant, to report suspicious activity, and to ensure that their property is secured. I have dedicated officers working on this, and we have specialist teams, the Community Investigation Unit, who take on all domestic dwelling houses, working very, very closely with colleagues, particularly in the City of Edinburgh, just where Midlothian is placed. We have a lot of overlap between the City and Midlothian in terms of crime groups, but we have a good working relationships. There is a lot of intelligence sharing between the two of us, for obvious reasons. And a key priority for me for the remaining months of this calendar year is to try and see that figure and that gap reducing round about prevention, because for every crime that's committed, there is a victim, and it's all about prevention and reducing victimisation as we move forward. On that note, Chair, I'm happy to take any questions in relation to this report, or I'm also happy to go on and touch upon the funded officer's report if desired.
Thanks, Kenny. It might be useful just to pause for a second. Overall, it's a really positive report. Thanks for bringing it forward. I, too, when I was looking through the papers, was disappointed to see the lower detection rate for domestic abuse. Having worked with women's charities for a long time, I can really understand how this impacts even wider in terms of just on victims and the impact of families and social work services and housing and such like. So I guess I'm just impressing on you that from me as a chair's perspective, this is vitally important. And secondly, I just wanted to ask, we're constantly talking about prevention and being bold, and we've heard a lot about that today. I'm just wondering how bold we are being with this, and are we doing things like, are we going into schools, and talking to secondary school pupils? There's been a lot of social attitude surveys lately that are looking at young people and about their attitudes to things like domestic abuse and consent and such like. And I think that if we're not, we're missing an opportunity. And I think that it's something that we should consider. And I guess it's just about where that lies, essentially. Is that something that you should be doing? Is it something that we would want to do in partnership? And where would that sit?
Yeah, Chair. Firstly, just in terms of the point about victimisation, absolutely understand that, and I think it's important for all board members to understand that anybody who does come forward and reports any relation to domestic incidents are afforded opportunity. Every support service, every time we're going to a domestic incident where we know there's kids involved within that family, that we're ensuring that there is the proper vulnerable person's referrals being submitted through to highlight that the family that potentially could have been exposed to domestic abuse. So I think we've came on leaps and bounds, I think, in the last few years in terms of working very closely with support agencies and ensuring that they are afforded the opportunity to speak with victims. In relation to your second point, we absolutely are. In terms of roundabout schools, the MVP Mentoring and Violence Programme, which was a national programme. We have now got individuals trained in that, which is hoping to try and get that whole message through and about that stigma and getting young people to actually stand up and be role models in addressing that. So yes, we absolutely do identify that, and I can give board members assurances that that is in place within Midlothian.
That's great, thank you. And I would also say that working with a lot of the agencies locally do always speak very highly of the work that you guys do, and in terms of the other support services that you do as well. So thank you very much for that. Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Chair. I'd particularly like to record my thanks to the officers for their involvement in the Bonnerig problem-solving partnership. I've referred a few incidents by constituents to the group, and the feedback I'm getting is that they seem to feel that it is being effective, and I've certainly noticed that there's been a reduction in the number of complaints over the time, so I'd like to thank you for that. You mentioned under, I think it was road safety, you said that there were four new areas for speed cameras, was that right? Can you give us an idea of whereabouts they'll be?
I think in fairness, as and when they are officially ratified, I will be disseminating that, yeah. But there's a number of hoops that they have to go through before it's finally approved, but certainly they're well down that line of getting four further sites identified. And what I can tell you, it's a mixture of sort of more urban and more rural locations. It's very well split. But I will, as soon as they're approved, let you know. I think the point that Mr. Marshall's making is that once they are approved, they are officially on the website, so there are no secrets.
Councillor Montgomery.
Hi, thanks. It's good you ask a question about speed cameras, and you don't even drive it, so I mean, it shouldn't really be an issue for you. Can I just ask, in terms of the report that's here, there's a whole range of operations actually taking place. And it does come on to the next report a bit, which I'll come to when we reach it, is that in terms of the community action teams, how much involvement do they have in some of the initiatives and some of the actions that are taking place in this? Because it looked to me as if there would be, in terms of town dispersals and, you know, some of the more serious crimes, and given what's likely to be happening by them. You know, and as I say, I'll come to that in the next part. But as I mean, the community action teams are involved in quite a number of the programmes that's actually just been put in front of us just now, which is going to be an issue when they're no longer there. I don't know if you want to comment or leave it to the next one, but I think it's worth making a point just to ask, are they involved in what's actually taking place at this and in these ones?
Yeah, Councillor, they definitely are aware in the overall picture, and I think you're right. If you make the correlation to the next report, you'll see how valid and proactive they are. I think for ourselves, the secret is in terms of actually ensuring that level of proactivity remains within the operating model that we have. I think I'm pleased to say that I think people have, certainly all the feedback to me in terms of the community beat officers approach has been welcomed, I think, throughout our communities, and it's a case of trying to enhance that and seeing what we can do with that. But I'm not going to say that the reduction or the removal of the funded officers isn't going to have an impact. It certainly will. However, what I have to do in working and be smarter in conjunction with my partners and the community is making sure that we maximise every opportunity we have to try and keep that enhanced service delivery within Midlothian.
Thanks, Kenny. Excellent reassurances there. I just want to pick up one last point, and it was right back at the beginning, and it was just over tackling substance misuse, and just when you were talking about the robust plan, which I think was the terminology that you used around police in Dalkeith, for example, at night time. And I just wanted to get an idea around call demand, which I assume is particularly high at weekends, but it was just to get an idea around what those figures are and what kind of cost we're talking about as well. And is it something that's increasing? The other point that I perhaps might want to bring in Rosie with is just, I'm not on the licensing board, but I know that in the licensing board we've been talking a lot about over-provision. And I think perhaps Rosie can clarify that there has now been an over-provision statement there. And I guess what I'm just trying to do is just trying to pick up some of the board's opinion on over-provision, is this a factor in terms of your robust plan that you're putting in place for Dalkeith, would it make any difference if there was less licensed premises, and do you think that more licensed premises would lead to higher levels of resources?
I think in terms of the overprovision policy and the analysis and the figures speak for themselves in terms of what the correlation is, in terms of the demand profile on us, the cost not only to ourselves, but the cost and the demand on other agencies, particularly the National Health Service. I think there's a clear correlation between the numbers of licensed premises, the availability of alcohol, and in terms of the demand profile and the impact that that has in the communities. I think that speaks for itself. Absolutely, it's the peak call demand time for us as a policing organisation. Hence, in terms of how our shift pattern works and things, we maximise the number of officers we have on the ground to try and minimise that impact and ensure that we have visibility. When I speak about robust, I just want to ensure that I have my officers deployed in the right place at the right time, that we are ensuring that we're being very, very proactive in terms of our visibility, of our engagement with licensees, of our engagement with stewards of these premises, and that everybody is conforming with the standards that we expect for it. Along with that comes a number of different issues in terms of CCTV provision, as we're making sure that the CCTV is in good working order and is going to be capturing it, working with taxis. You know, the taxis are a significant part. Anything round about, you have a number of licensed premises coming out at the same time. There's only a finite number of taxis, so it's ensuring that, you know, the dispersal element for the taxis is working and working well as too. They may well come back and tell me that everything is absolutely as it should be. I just want to ensure that we have that as one of the areas that I'm looking to address.
Rosie, could you just clarify the...
So the Council has had an overprovision statement in place for almost 2 years now, and recently that has been reviewed and agreed that the Dalkeith area is still overprovided. They also added two additional areas of concern, which kind of don't really fall under the legislation, but they're areas where they're starting to veer towards overprovided. And certainly as well, the Licensing Forum and the Community Safety Partnership are working with local licensed premises in Dalkeith to try and encourage responsible alcohol retailing. And as part of that, a subgroup of the Licensing Forum and the Woodburn Problem Solving Partnership has been set up. And that group at the moment is, they're just finding their feet, but they are looking at pulling in all of the licensed retailers in the Dalkeith area to see what they can do, you know, for example, getting the larger retailers to help the smaller retailers with things like Challenge 25 policies and training. So they're kind of, that's a bit of proactive work that both the Licensing Forum and the Partnership are doing. But certainly the overprovision statement has recently been re-agreed, and it is still in place that Dalkeith is overprovided.
I'm minded to, unless I'm told I can't otherwise, as to, in some kind of form that's fit with standing orders, perhaps write to the Chair of the Licensing Board and just convey what we see you know, as factors that they should perhaps think about when when using their overprovision policy, should such decisions come up. I think it seems sensible given that there is such a high demand and pressure on resources here. Councillor Devine.
Yeah. Just wanted to come back on the very informative report that we got this morning from Majesty's Police Force. The bit that I am still very concerned about is housebreaking, because we have now had particularly incidents where people had their house broken into while they actually were living in the house themselves. And that has to be one of the most awful and upsetting situations. We had the incidents at Moorfoot, where rather at daylight, full daylight, with the person that owned the house very nearby, the house was broken into. £5,000 of goods were taken, and then the quad was also taken because the keys were found in the house. I mean, quite horrific. Rural crime, rural crime is still very significant. We know who these people are. I mean, I know you had a good idea who they were. It's just very frustrating that you, as a group, can't really sort this out, particularly when you are aware who has committed the crime. Would you like to comment? If you can.
Yeah, Councillor, as I alluded to in my report, we do have specialist resources to it. Yes, sometimes it's equally frustrating for ourselves as it is for victims in terms of getting that end result, that end game, which is actually detecting or locking somebody up or getting property and things back. It's complex. It's a very, very complex situation and scenario. However, I do want to give reassurances that this is a real priority. It's my number one priority in Midlothian in terms of tackling this. We have specialist resources. My officers are all primed and are fully aware of what my expectations are in trying to tackle this. However, I do allude to the fact is that we do have a number of different teams operating, which makes it even more complex in terms of the types of crime you alluded to. You have the rural crime aspect of it, the quad bike part of it, which brings another sphere that you do have individuals who will target rural properties for things like quad bikes or other stuff that's associated with rural crime. But you need to take some assurances that we are endeavouring to do our best. We are ploughing a lot of resources into it. Lots of these stuff rely on forensics as well, so we're still hopeful that maybe some months down the line we will get a positive hit back from either a DNA or a fingerprint for it. But suffice to say, every single one of these crimes gets looked at, and I'm sure you'll know the levels and the level of inquiry that went into the specific incident that you talk about. But that is replicated throughout. What we do need is we do need the communities, though, to help us. Absolutely, they are our eyes and ears, and I know full well in terms of the rural aspect that word is certainly out there, and they are becoming far more proactive in terms of coming forward with information. We need that. We need that to continue and to be enhanced to help us tackle these individuals.
So, just to make sure, I have nothing but the highest of praise. It's not criticism. It's really highlighting this.
Thanks. And just for the purpose of the minutes, can I have a seconder for the note to the licensing board? Councillor Devine, thank you. Okay. And finally, this time, actually moving on to the community policing team report.
Yeah, thanks, Chair, and to members. Again, I don't want to dwell and go through everything in fine detail with it. I think it's a positive, very positive report. Bits that I do want is you'll see the significant amount of alcohol recovered in the first quarter of this year. And I think that was round about some proactivity at some of the festivals and local common riding events, which we specifically deployed our officers. Some of them in uniform, some of them in plain clothes, which was agreed a couple of meetings ago that we could move towards that model. And I think that model is reaping the rewards in terms of the benefits that brings. When you actually read the incidents of note, you'll see a huge variety that the officers are involved in. There's prevention in there, there's tackling road safety, there's tackling misuse of drugs, there's tackling house break-ins. All our priority areas are being covered by our funded officers. I think some of the key issues for me and the ones that I do wish to highlight on page 63, the last one, on there where the MCAT stopped a vehicle being driven by a known individual, it's removing that £1,000 for these individuals. It's about that impact that has and about prevention aspects of it. Lots of very, very good and proactive work has been undertaken by these officers, both in terms of enforcement and in terms of
prevention, which, again, yeah, Councillor Montgomery alluded to the fact, is that going to continue? It's up to me to make sure that that does continue over the coming months in a model of some form or fashion. But I don't want to dwell too much in terms of the report. The report speaks for itself, and I'm happy to take any questions anybody may have on it.
Everybody happy? No? Wondered.
No, just a similar question to the last one. I mean, I did allude to earlier that in terms of the incidents here, I think it was what about, I counted them up, so if I've got them wrong, it's about just over 1,200, I think it is, in terms of the actual incidents that's recorded on pages 60 and 61. Again, I mean, the Community Action Team would actually be involved in a number of these as well. I know there's some more detailed reports in the follow-up pages, but they would actually be involved in this. And just best of luck in actually trying to make sure that you can keep this going, because it's obviously, I don't like using the word challenge and I don't like all the jargon of equipment, but it's definitely going to be very difficult for you to actually sustain this. It'll just be interesting to see how that progresses in the future.
Thanks. Do you want to conclude? Thank you very much for those reassurances, and I know it was minted in our last meeting that you know, that we could keep that dialogue continuing. Excellent. Happy to move on. And item 5.5, which was the to follow paper, which is the Police Scotland Budget Considerations Report by Police Scotland.
Thank you, Chair. This really is, I suppose, I'll split it into two. I've got Superintendent Brian Rogers with me today, and Brian's leading the work on my behalf in terms of a lot of things we've spoken about. Yourself, Chair, you mentioned about how bold are we being around about prevention, early intervention, and how do we make that strategic shift, and it's been sort of threaded through all we've said, and Brian will give the board some overview of what that work looks like and where we intend to progress some of that, working very closely with partners who have been doing us a fantastic job working together for a long period of time, but really hoping to fully realise the principles of Christie and various other changes in terms of government policy and local policy. So that's Brian's role here today, and hopefully members will take value from that, and we were keen to hear your views and feedback on that as per the role of this panel. Equally, in terms of the role of the panel, I wrote on the basis of seeking feedback in terms of some of the budget pressures which have been reported widely, and members will be aware of some of those issues, albeit perhaps not in the necessarily in the fine detail or the factual reporting that the Chief Constable undertakes with the Scottish Police Authority and with the Scottish Government. But what this really is to provide you some context around about that, and again, just sort of give you that opportunity to provide me with the feedback in terms of what that might mean for your local plans and how we continue to deliver that going forward. In essence, I think this is important to put the context around about this as far as supervisory ratios, that we have gone through 4 years of transformation and change, much like our colleagues from Fire and Rescue. We have gone from 8 chief constables to 1. We have gone from 10 deputy chief constables to 3. We have gone from over 30 assistant chief constables to 7. We have gone from over 240 superintending ranks to somewhere in the region of 140. So there is a continuing pattern about how the organisation goes from 10 precursor organisations into 1, and how that is delivered in an effective and an efficient way, maintaining the Scottish Government's agenda of 17,234 officers on an average basis, and delivering that within a balanced budget. That poses us a number of challenges in terms of that funding, given that 93% of our overall budget is on staffing costs. That only leaves 7% of non-staff costs for us to squeeze out as much saving as we possibly can because of the constraints of being unable to flex the 17,234 number and the policy of no compulsory redundancy for a public sector organisation. So one facet of this was to look at, as I say, that the supervisory ratios, it's happened at all ranks, and most recently the focus has turned to the inspector and sergeant ranks. Benchmarking has been done with other law enforcement in the UK, Europe and globally, and it was recognised that in all of those circumstances that the ratios that we have in Scotland are higher than the rest of policing families. There has been some direction given to us to look at it and look at it on a phased basis, and it is not a one-size-fits-all, because clearly we appreciate that different functions, different geographies, different locations may require a different model. We have also approached it from a divisional point of view to maintain as far as we possibly can all our numbers in frontline policing, and first of all scrutinise any kind of back office functions, albeit that's fairly small, but any back office functions where we can rationalise as much as we possibly can. That work continues. We've implemented phase one of that, which has been an initial cut at reducing some ranks. One particular chief inspector post has been removed, so we've gone from 8 to 7 for the division. So that, in essence, then saves at the front end. The other key point to this is that when these posts are rationalised, there is, because we maintain the 17234 magic number, the constable post, base post, is repatriated back to division. So Mr. Livingston's quote in the letter that I wrote about the constable numbers, in essence what we're seeing is a flattening out of the structure but maintaining the overall force numbers. With that comes certain challenges, obviously, and what we end up asking our officers to do is have more autonomy, more empowerment, more responsibility. With that comes the support and the training that's required for sergeants to perhaps take on tasks that inspectors used to do, for inspectors to take on tasks that chief inspectors used to do, and so on and so forth, and that goes all the way up. Myself, I'm taking on the responsibilities that used to be done by ACCs. So it's a facet of the flattening of a public sector organisation, which our organisation, like many others, is now having to do. That's the essence, really, of the letter. I have had limited feedback, to be truthful, as a result of it. I think in conversations I've had with chief executives and with councillors in the one-to-one, it's fair to say that they fully recognise that we are trying to deliver an effective and efficient service against a balanced budget, and the recognition that this type of activity has happened across all sectors, and an understanding that we are facing that challenge too. I'm happy to pause there and clarify any of those points or take any questions before I pass you over to Superintendent Rogers, who will lead you through our conversation about our preventative model that we're proposing to take forward.
Thanks. I just have one query, if you like, which may well be picked up in your next presentation. But I wasn't sure if your presentation was just going to be about what's in the paper, because I know you're looking for feedback, but there doesn't seem to be much to feedback on. So I just wondered if is there going to be more detail? Is that what you're going to talk about just now? Yeah. Councillor Montgomery.
Hi, thanks, Chair. I was actually going to email you yesterday, but again, I'm the same as Councillor Parry. There isn't an awful lot to go on the paper that's there. And I would certainly like more information in writing. I think it would be helpful in terms of actually getting a proper look at what's happening, because as a serious business, making sure that the police are actually working properly. And I would agree with what's been said earlier. I mean, the reports that have came in, and certainly the local officers that I have any dealing with, I mean, I've got nothing but respect for what they do under very difficult circumstances, and I do understand all that. But we had a presentation from the Police Federation. They wrote to all councillors in Scotland, and we had them in the Labour group to get a presentation. I don't know if the other parties have done it or not, but certainly the information that was given to us is it's quite serious the way things are actually developing, in terms of numbers and in terms of budget cuts. And you're right, if you've got 93% of the budget is actually staffing, any cut, you're looking at bodies or however you want to deal with that. There's no other way you can look at it. And it's the same in local government. And we've had a council tax freeze for 9 years, which does make it very difficult. Obviously, you've got a different way of the budget. But I mean, my understanding of the way the budget works, and you'll be able to correct me if I'm wrong, is that the Scottish Government makes an allocation which is then discussed with the police authority and the chief constable, and then that's distributed throughout the rest of Scotland. I mean, that would be roughly the way it would actually work. I mean, I'd still go back to the old Lothian and Borders days when the chief constable made a requisition to the five local authorities in this area, and there was discussion about what level of policing we wanted, where we wanted to see an increase, where we wanted to see an influence, if you want, or a stronger input. That doesn't seem to happen now, because it just seems to come and arrive, like here today. And I'm not having the criticisms of yourself, because obviously I understand there's other people higher up the chain than yourselves. But I don't think a verbal report today really is enough in terms of the seriousness of the budget cuts that are coming. I mean, I don't know what the budget cut is in Police Scotland this year. I mean, I've tried to find out, I've read papers, I do everything that normally anybody would do, and I've not been able to detect that. I know it's around £1 billion budget in total, but I mean, I don't know what the cut is this year. And if there is a cut, I mean, and as I say, your officer led in terms of the numbers, in terms of the budget, that makes it very difficult. I mean, my understanding is that Midlothian, pre-Police Scotland, with 10 officers per shift in the Midlothian area, that's now 8, for the information we got for the Police Federation. If that's wrong, I'm happy for it to be corrected. That's a massive cut. But I think one of the things that does seem to have been cut back, and this is one of the areas where it's probably a hidden cut, if you want, although it's no hidden to the public, is in terms of the cut in overtime, because that does seem to have been something that's actually happened quite dramatically. And I know that recently there was an incident in Pennycook where there was a young girl in a house on her own in her early 20s, and there was 4 youngsters turned up at the back door to break in. In the middle of the afternoon, she phoned the police, told her that the situation was, and they arrived reasonably quickly, not as quick as they would have hoped, I suppose, but they did arrive. But by the time it came at 6 o'clock at night, they had a change of shift, and the same officers that were dealing with it in the afternoon couldn't deal with it at night because there wasn't any overtime provision. That isn't a great situation, and I just wondered if the overtime cuts is part of a hidden sort of cut, if you want, because you don't actually see less officers in the street, if you want, then that wasn't a very helpful situation. But in terms of the bodies, I mean, there's not really an awful lot of information coming out. And a bit like the fire service, which I asked earlier on, I think it'd be useful to get some of that information, because as a local councillor, and I'm sure other people get it as well, you get people asking you, you try to get a police when you kind of get them. I don't accept that. I mean, that's people exaggerate all these things, but I mean, it'd be useful to have a better idea of what the numbers are. And certainly when we take the the 14 community action team officers off the street, there's going to be a massive cut if the levels that we're talking about in officers that are existing at the moment, and we're taking 14 off, that will be a massive change of personnel in the Midlothian area.
Okay, there's a number of points there, Councillor, which I'll try and cover. You mentioned obviously your meeting with the Federation, and that you're quite entitled to have had that, and for them to make that. The Federation are obviously providing information and quoting various numbers and so on and so forth. And it's not for me to comment on what their agenda is and what their mechanism of working is. Clearly, from my point of view, they are keen to use whatever's appropriate to shine a light on their raison d'etre, which is about protecting their officer numbers and protecting their staff welfare and so on and so forth. So that's their raison d'etre. It's not for me to necessarily get into that conversation as substantively it stands, because I wasn't part of that process. As far as the budget and any local authority panel involvement in that, unfortunately, you referred to the Lothian Borders Police Board and how the budget's set up. as part of the national organisation now, the scrutiny of the finance, which is allocated on a centralised basis from Scottish Government to the Chief Constable, to the police, Scottish Police Authority, and the finance and investment element of that, that is scrutinised at that level. My budget, again, from the staff costs, is centralised, so I don't have necessarily control over that. I have a degree of budgetary responsibility for some of the non-staff costs, so simple things like fuel and so on and so forth for running the vehicles, and that's where I have been given some targets to meet in terms of making some savings. But it is not within my remit to provide you here collectively with financial statements, because that is done on a national basis. I say that's a part of police reform, it's part of how the governance of the National Police Force is set up, and so I can't really provide you any more in relation to that. What I can tell you, though, your reference to overtime, and again there's been some media reporting in relation to this, there is no such thing in my division as any ban on overtime. And there never has been, and there never will be. There is extremely prudent, extremely robust management of overtime for obvious reasons. It's public money. If we make savings out of the overtime budget, then that's good financial management. And if that, at the end of the day, helps to contribute to the greater good of policing in terms of creating a balanced budget, that's also good. What I can reassure you about is, for local commanders like Chief Inspector Simpson, if he is prudent and he saves money, I have entered into an agreement that he will get a proportion of that saving back so that he can run initiatives in his local area. So I in no way will punish any of my managers who perform exceptionally well in being prudent and saving overtime. If that debunks any myths that are being put out by anyone in the press or otherwise, then hopefully that reassures every member around this table that we will do absolutely everything we can, including the use of overtime, to serve the communities of Mid Lothian and for me across my division. As far as officer numbers go, I'm absolutely transparent about this as much as I can be. I look at this from a purely divisional point of view, and I say that for all good reason. I have, and it's reported, it's easily available through websites, I have at my disposal 924 officers, as it's reported just now. And we look at that on a dynamic, demand-led, day-by-day basis. In fact, more than day-by-day. And if Chief Inspector Simpson requires additional resource because there are issues here or demands here, then we flex round about that. And we use all of that. And on top of that, I have the ability to lever in from other parts of the country, the east of Scotland and nationally, specialist resources to assist in that. To ask questions such as has been done through the press, or to quote figures, is actually misleading and unhelpful. It's not helpful. And it's unhelpful because it's the wrong question to ask. It's more about the service and the quality of the service that we provide. And you alluded to, if someone says, oh, you're unable to get a police officer, my whole passion is about, we create a network of officers who are available round the clock and can be summoned up and will attend quickly. And when they get there, as my colleagues in the fire said, it's about the quality of the service that they deliver when they get there too. So we could drill into these numbers, but the problem with them are also that to talk about two or three officers here, there, and there could end up prejudicing my daily operations and undermine public confidence. So I think we need to be very careful and separate out what is happening as a national debate between Scottish Government, Chief Constable, Scottish Police Authority and the Scottish Police Federation, and what we are trying and seeking to deliver here in Mid Lothian, and obviously seek your views and your feedback on, and your assurance and support. So I know that's a very long-winded answer, Councillor, to your questions, but it's really me trying to operate within the remit and the role that I've got and provide you an assurance that, yes, there are budget pressures, and tell you anything otherwise, but we are doing our damnedest to make sure that we provide the best service we possibly can with the money that's available to us.
Thanks very much. I think that is really reassuring, and actually it was really good to get a wee bit more level of detail. The only other thing that I was just going to suggest was that would you have a contact whereby you could perhaps give Councillor Colley just to get that financial information, not asking for it to be shared here. I know it's not your responsibility, but could you just pass on a contact?
I suppose it's a governance question about the legitimacy of the question and whether it's you know, anyone can ask these questions. It's about, is it through the office of the councillor here or whatever? Like, there's absolutely open and transparency around about all of these things through the police authority. I just don't want to overstep my remit and my authority around any of that. But equally, I'm more than happy to speak to any one of you or indeed the councillor after the meeting and steer you in whatever direction I possibly can.
Councillor Minkum, did you want to come back?
Thanks again. I appreciate that. I'd be happy to do that. What I'm more concerned about are the numbers in Midlothian, because obviously that's the area that I'm a councillor in, and I think it'd be useful to try and get some of that. And, you know, what I don't want to do, and I agree with you, you don't want to prejudice the work that the police are doing, and, you know, and obviously give out information that could be, you know, might be counterproductive, for the want of a better description. But I think it would, for me, as a councillor who didn't support the creation of Police Scotland, and I'm a bit upfront with that, our group in here argued for three services in Scotland, and I think that's maybe something that might have been a better way of operating. But at the moment, as I say, we've got the one, so we have to try and make it work. But I'm happy to have a chat with you after it, if you feel that would have any help. But as I say, it's more the numbers of Midlothian that I'm concerned about, because, you know, I do live in my area, I do walk about my area, I do go about my area, and I spoke to Inspector Simpson fairly recently about just if there was an incident, just a quick phone call or an email, look, this has happened, just so you know. And that's been happening since then, and it's been great. It has made a difference, because nothing makes you feel worse than walking down the street and somebody says, did you hear about such and such, and you don't know. And as a local councillor, you can be stupid enough yourself without getting any assistance for anybody else. So that was actually a very positive thing. But I think for myself, I'd be a bit more appreciative in terms of the numbers and what it was and what it is now. But I don't want to do that. If it's not a public thing, I'm not unhappy with that.
Thanks.
Can I just on that? Absolutely. I think I appreciate your candour, and I'm non-political, so that's quite good in state of that. What I would say is that we want to continue these really positive relationships that we have. You know, we just mentioned there between Kenny and the councillor, and we're more than happy to have those type of conversations and provide that level of detail. I have to put the bounds of protection round about that in terms of prejudice in any operations. But that trust and confidence that we have, that relationship we have with each and every one of you, is critical to this. And I want to try and, in some ways, maintain the integrity of this forum and separate that out, perhaps, from our day-to-day communications, if that's the best way to describe that, Chair.
I think I share that sentiment. I think many of us do. You know, there is what happens and what you guys do on a day-to-day basis, and then there's the kind of strategy and the reassurances we get here. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so interested in the detail as to the partnership, how it will continue to work. I do know Councillor Devinck does want to make another comment, and then it would be good to move on to that, because I'm aware of time.
Right. My goodness. First of all, interesting to hear that the Labour group had a meeting with the police force. I cannot recall that the SNP group or, for that matter, Councillor Baxter had such a meeting. Would be interesting to have such a meeting. One of the things I want to say is that I really am extraordinarily pleased how in the last few months there has been such an effort made by Midlothian Police about making sure that the police is represented at the community councils. And that is a very good move, because we need to make the community councils much more inclusive. And I think it's something that I fought for a long time, and I'm really very grateful. And I need to compliment you on the enormous changes that have taken place, quite noticeable. Furthermore, I would just like to say, and it's not a dig, but for 2.5 years, almost 3 years, Labour refused to participate in these discussions, and I'm just at a loss why that ever happened.
Just remind councillors to use their microphones, and we're very welcoming that Councillor Montgomery's here. And can we...
Sorry, well, it has been explained to Councillor Devine on a number of occasions.
Chair, we will follow up what Superintendent Rogers is going to sort of talk to you about. I'm conscious of time, so I've taken up lots of his time. I'm really sorry about that. If Brian gives you a flavour and overview of it, I think it's always easier sometimes to talk some of these things through than try and communicate it, perhaps in the written word or, as I like it, in diagrams. But if Brian does that, we'll seek your views, and we will follow this up with a series of further detail, and clearly that would be our intention. But I was just conscious to take the opportunity when we had a bit of a captive audience perhaps today to progress the conversation in a constructive way that, as we've had up to now. So thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm going to try and be as brief as I can, but I'm just looking to give some examples of some of the work that's been ongoing around looking to enhance service delivery. Just to touch on supervisory ratios again, I suppose the two key points I would take forward from it are, firstly, there has been a service recognition that one size doesn't fit all, and there is discretion to the division about how we apply and review the requirement of whether a post needs to hold a particular rank or the span of command or supervision that individual holds, and also that emphasis that's come from the commander that our priority has been our community resources and that our focus in restructuring has been on our back office and departmental functions. And I suppose, having said that, what I really wanted to spend a little bit of time on was just some examples of that, how we're seeking to improve service delivery and make the best use of resource we can. And a number of the points have been raised during the discussions today. The first thing in terms of our prevention services is we have a division-wide prevention team. They focus on geographic responsibilities. More than half the team are co-located in local authority areas. We would seek to continue that. We're not talking about removal of those posts from co-location. But what we have identified is prevention is becoming more and more complicated, and we need to become, in your own words, Chair, a lot bolder around some of those complexities. Things like tackling cybercrime and online exploitation, and things like, and I'm really hoping no one's going to ask me to explain it, but the Pokemon Go phenomenon and these type of things. So what we're looking to do is really re-emphasise the matrix responsibility of our prevention officers across the entire division, so all those officers get the opportunity to develop expertise in individual areas around things like preventing reoffending, protecting people, engaging communities, all of the things that are important to us, and we want to be at the forefront of it, but one individual can't hold that depth of knowledge, can't go out into wider partnerships and into, you know, wider across Scotland and get best practice, draw it back into the division and support our community ward officers and our youth community officers actually in communities delivering prevention around it. So what we're talking about here is not a change in structure per se, but a change in responsibility where officers work locally but have division-wide portfolio responsibilities, but also act as a single point of contact to put local services in touch with experts in other areas. So we make that best use of resource around it. The other thing we've had to consider, and actually quite willingly, is our responsibilities under the Community Empowerment Act and the changes in community planning, which mean we are all part of that partnership, that broader partnership. Policing in those terms isn't solely responsible for community safety, but a partner in everything and support every aspect of it. And we've had to consider how we best support that beyond our current arrangements as well. So what we're looking to do is we've reviewed the post of the local authority liaison officer, which is currently a sergeant's post. That post has obviously our responsibility, it does exactly what it says in the tin, to join things together. But our view is we're increasingly co-located, increasingly working together. Our aim is one of shared service delivery, not just shared planning. And as such, we've had to review that post.
and we're changing those to a constable's post. But rather than actually just solely focusing on that community safety element, we're looking to change those posts into community planning posts. So we would still propose that those posts are co-located with the council's agreement, but we would propose that the remit is far more akin to the vision of the Community Empowerment Act than solely our responsibilities under community safety. So in real practical terms, just to sum that up, because I'm conscious I've just gone right over the top of a few things, but I'm keen that, you know, if anyone has any questions, they might ask it. Our supervisory ratios work is focused on back office functions. We're looking to leverage the best and most expert prevention we can out of the division, particularly with a view to being bold and moving far more into long-term outcomes-based provision and not simply responsive or physical crime prevention, which absolutely has its place, but we need to be ambitious in all this. At present, there are three departmental officers from our prevention unit who are co-located with Midlothian Council colleagues, a sergeant and two constables. We're looking at that sergeant becoming a constable's post and becoming community empowerment based rather than purely community safety based. And we're looking at one of those constables' posts having more of a portfolio base, but still based locally and able to be a conduit for prevention information coming through around it. And in essence, that's the change of the work we're doing. So having just raced through it slightly, I'll pause and hopefully if there's any questions, I can clarify.
Yeah, I certainly have two, perhaps one for you and one for council colleagues. It was just more around the lay low role. And, you know, I appreciate that there's reasons why we want to change, and I don't disagree with any of your reasoning around that. But I guess it's just about looking for reassurances about our relationship and how that's maintained. Being new to the police board, certainly being new as chair and councillor, I've found the relationship really good. I think we work in partnership really well. I'm keen not to lose any of that because I think it's so valuable to all councillor colleagues and officers. Second questions, more for council colleagues as well, just to find out about the budget relationship, how that will work. That sounds all in spirit of shared services and partnership-y, all the good things that we like, yay. So it's just to get a wee bit more detail about that and just a wee bit of clarification, really. And the other point, last point, was just around some of these things sound great. I'd love to tell my councillor colleagues more about them and get you as much feedback as possible because I think it can be really valuable in input into your models. So I wonder if there is something outside of this meeting that you could perhaps share, circulate around so that we can have those wider conversations.
In response to your first question, I would give my absolute guarantee what we're looking to do is increase co-production and shared services, not decrease on it. I think the one issue I sometimes have is that when we have centralised departments who specialise in things, it's very easy for people who are providing services to think they do that. And our emphasis is very much on our community teams and our community officers working in partnership to deliver in communities around it. And that's where I see that increase in partnership working around those kind of shared services. So it's by no means a removal in terms of any partnership working. I would hope it leads to an increase in partnership working, and it's based around that. I can certainly look at any form of presentation. What we've also tried to do, I'm really conscious for our people that the world of multiple strategies and multiple action plans can lead to a lack of certainty and focus and clarity because we can't expect people to hold in their heads different action plans. What we've tried to do is simplify the landscape and just do single sort of blueprint of what we're looking for our people. We are focused on the Local Outcome Improvement Plan, or the SAOE as it is now and will emerge, and that should be the mainstream element of it. In terms of sort of budgetary and funding, I haven't overly touched on it, but one of the posts that sits within the department is a post that's funded by Midlothian Council. that will be completely unchanged in the spirit of the SLA. There is no impact on that post, and we will deliver what we have agreed to under that SLA. But obviously, I would very much view the planned community planning post to be part of the team overall. And, you know, in the way I keep describing it is, I don't expect that police officer to only work on community safety related elements. If the multi-agency community planning team are working on child poverty, then that's what that officer will contribute to, because that's part of our wider responsibility.
Yeah, just to come in on the point about the funded officer. So the funded officer is, you'll probably know, it's the police antisocial behaviour officer who sits within our team. That's the constable that's been referred to, is fully funded by the council, is an integral part of the community safety partnership and our team's approach to handling antisocial behaviour. Certainly our team could not manage without that post, and it is a full-time post that is up to capacity in terms of what he's working on. At present, both that role and the community safety partnership analyst, which is also funded by the council, they report in to myself as a for kind of daily workload, but through the Police Scotland structure. They are technically managed by the Police Scotland LALO, who is obviously the sergeant sitting above them, who deals with all of their annual leave and other kind of requirements, and also assists with the workload management. So it's not entirely clear in this new structure how that line management will pan out with the change of the LALO and the new constable coming in. The other point I was also going to make was, you haven't mentioned about the local delivery officers, which are when we had had discussions off the table, there was just mentioned that other areas would be getting a local delivery officer, which is non-portfolio based, and there hasn't been a discussion about that for Midlothian, so it'd be helpful if you could touch on that.
Yeah, certainly. In terms of the first one, as you say, it's right and proper that they have wellbeing support, administrative support, and that will be provided from one of the community sergeants based in Midlothian, and it will be down to the discretion of the area commander around that. In terms of the local delivery officer, I don't think it's necessarily a matter of others getting. The structure as it is quite disparate, and these posts exist. The post does exist in Midlothian. It's just because of the nature of funding, that local delivery officer deals exclusively with antisocial behaviour, because that was the priority that was deemed appropriate, and that's what the post was funded for. So it's not a matter of one authority getting different elements. It's just a matter of how those officers are used within each local area.
Thanks very much. And I mean, just to reiterate, you know, we're not trying to tell you, you know, what to do. I'm sure you've kind of got the right ideas for your structure, but, you know, we would like to feedback in it. So if you could send something around, and also a kind of timescale as well. I'm sure you want to get this done as quickly as possible, and I think you commented that you'd kind of looked to commence phase one. So if you could let us know some good dates to get back as well. Anything else you want to add, or... No? Any other questions or comments? Yep.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. As I suppose a key stakeholder in what Brian's talking about here, it's probably appropriate that I just make comment on what Brian's proposing in terms of the way that I would see that assisting in the overall delivery in the communities that we've focused on so greatly today. In a similar way, the LALOs for the police were far more embedded and far more advanced than our local authority liaison officers with the fire service. But certainly through the recent prevention protection review that we've held in the fire service, we've found that role to be absolutely invaluable. And I think, picking up from what Brian's saying, we're looking at exactly the same type of model, which involves us effectively mobilising our response to be far more upskilled, to be a far greater part of community action and community intervention, distributing work appropriately so it doesn't always fall to the same small group of officers who are deemed to have all those skills, when really the boots on the ground, as you were, the guys in the fire stations or the guys in the police station have got
all those skills in their arsenal and should be using them on a daily basis. So I think what I'm saying is that in terms of the way that we look to work as a conjoined team moving forward, that blurring of the lines between intervention and prevention is absolutely there. And that's how we should see this in action in terms of multi-agency work. So very interesting to hear what Brian's got to say there.
I think that's really helpful, and it's good to hear how David sort of used the terminology there, because I think it is, we've moved beyond when this was, you know, we used to have liaison, which by the very nature of its description is we talk and we share information, to properly conjoined, integrated teams on a problem-solving, preventative, early intervention approach. And I think that's really what we're moving into, and we can hopefully, we can agree what the labels are, as long as people are working with the same purpose to deliver the same outcomes, which I think is what we're all trying to do here, I think that's where we see the real benefits, and then they provide that better conduit for the officers and the staff who are out on the ground delivering. So I think that's really helpful in the way David has articulated that. So thanks.
Thanks very much. I don't think any of us disagree in spirit. I think it's just in terms of technicalities and just making sure that we've got those reassurances moving forward that we can still work as productively and in partnership as we have done. And done with that item. And just move on to any other business. Oh, no. Okay, date of the next meeting, I assume, is the 15th of November, which is the same day as the Community Safety and Justice Partnership. And just one note to this, that we did have a discussion in the earlier meeting group that we may be looking to kind of shuffle around some time. So if you do attend both meetings, I know it can be difficult to be here for the whole day, but I know that Rosie's looking at that, so we might be in touch. That's why the time and date is not there. But thank you very much.